This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Congratulations on getting through your 9-to-5. Thank you so much for listening. It is The Drive on 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com, and the brand new Odyssey app. The weather outside is delightful. The Royals are back in town. They're 16-10. Chad Johnson's going to fight on the undercard of the Floyd Mayweather fight. The Chiefs draft is complete. There's a lot of news happening right now in the sports world. Coming up in about 10 minutes, if you missed our conversation with owner, chairman, CEO, and let's be honest here, the most important thing is friend of the show. I mean, Clark Hunt's done a lot of cool things. The best thing he's done in his life is really shack up with this radio show. That's the best thing that he's done, is really align himself with winners and align himself with this radio show. So we'll catch up with our friend, our pal, our buddy, Clark Hunt will be on the show coming up in just a little bit. Before we get into the top stories of the day and the hits, this is a great time to be a Kansas City Chiefs fan. I'm not telling you something that you don't know. I think the biggest reason why you should be happy today as a Kansas City Chiefs fan is really twofold. Number one, the only thing they needed to do this offseason was completed. The Chiefs didn't need to go get a number two wide receiver. I'd like one. They didn't need to go get one. I certainly would like another corner. Wouldn't deem that to be a need. This team couldn't compete with the offensive line that they have. And the sense of urgency that the organization had is the same sense of urgency that you, the fans, have. Very rarely would I say the energy of the fan base and the energy of the team is at the exact same place. It was obvious what the Chiefs' issue was. They spent the first-round draft pick and additional picks on Orlando Brown. And the second round, with the extra second-round pick that they picked up, they went, I would say, arguably best player on the board with Nick Bolton. They also then picked up Creed Humphrey, center out of Oklahoma, a guy we think can start from day one. They then took necessary gambles and swings on some very physically gifted players on day three. The Chiefs in 3 months went from an abject failure at offensive line to possibly one of the more talented units in the league. They've gotten considerably younger. They've gotten considerably more athletic. They got considerably more physical up front as well. It wasn't just in one game last year that the Chiefs got pushed around. They got pushed around kind of frequently last year. They just were winning games, so no one wanted to talk about it. But we saw the Chargers push this offensive line around. We saw Denver at times push this offensive line around where they couldn't really run the ball and force the Chiefs to be one-dimensional. I mean, there was a stretch there where Mahomes, over a six-week span, threw for more yards than any player in the history of the league. They weren't doing that just because it was cool. They were doing that because they couldn't run the football. A lot of that was due to the offensive line. So they've fixed a lot of those problems heading into the offseason. And if Brett Veach only had one objective, he completed it at a very, very high level. I like this team's draft. You go best player available and you think a little bit long term with Nick Bolton. In the short term, you pick up a guy in Creed Humphrey who can start day one for you and the best offensive lineman in the Big 12 last season. On day three, you take flyers on guys you deem to be athletic projects. Kane Doe, who can potentially emerge into being a Alex Okafor, Emmanuel Agba-like pass rusher, which you certainly would take as a fourth-round draft pick, a nice rotational piece. You pick up a guy in Noah Gray who can be a really solid number two tight end, seems versatile, can be a real good number two tight end, can also replace what you had with Anthony Sherman and be a really good H-back type. You look at Cornell Powell out of Clemson, physical beast, played a really good year last year in Clemson. Bring him on as a special teams player. Maybe he helps you in the passing game and gets 25 targets this year, and you sort of bring him along slowly. And then Trey Smith, who from a talent standpoint is probably a day two pick, a second and third round guy, but because of the physicals and his injury history and his health risk, he then falls down to the board in the sixth round, and you're happy with the value that you got from him. I really like this team's draft. I think they looked ahead to the future. They took very smart gambles and risks that you can take when you're in a position that they are. They didn't reach for anybody on the board. They also got a couple of guys that could potentially start for this team, and both of them on the offensive line. I think today is a great day to be a member of the Kansas City Chiefs. And if you were worried about the gap closing between them and their opposition, it's not going to be because of the offensive line. Maybe an injury happens over the season. We can't predict those. Maybe one team in Buffalo or Baltimore or Cleveland takes a huge jump that you just can't predict. But the problem isn't coming from this roster. Their offensive line is back. Quarterback is back. I think they're going to make another move at wide receiver or corner. This roster is as strong as it was heading into last season for a team that virtually went 15-1. Coming up in a little bit, we'll be joined by Clark Hunt, the CEO, the chairman, the owner of the Kansas City Chiefs. But first, let's get to the top stories today in Kansas City.
Okay, now, from the beginning.
And now, the moment you've all been waiting for.
Check it out.
The top stories of the day, every day at 5 o'clock. The hits.
Cue it up.
One.
Let's go.
Well, as you mentioned in Kansas City, the biggest story of the day and of the weekend is the NFL draft. But Carrington, the job Brett Veach has done to rebuild this offensive line from what it was at the beginning or end of Super Bowl to what it is now, did it remind you of the way he rebuilt the 2018 Chiefs defense?
The Chiefs, to me, are in a very simple pass or fail. Like, it's not really a draft grade to me. I always think draft grades are pretty futile, but I understand their purpose of them. To me, it's kind of like power rankings. Like, why are we ranking teams? It's not college football. Your ranking system just doesn't really matter. But I understand its purpose. It's fun to click on. It's fun to discuss. This year was a very simple pass or fail. Is your offensive line good enough to really unlock the full potential of this offense? It is good enough. From left to right, from Orlando Brown, a Pro Bowl left tackle, to an all-pro left guard in Joe Tooney, to Creed Humphrey, who is one of the best interior offensive line prospects in the college draft. At right guard, if Kyle Long's healthy, he could start for the team at right guard, and he's probably their most seasoned offensive lineman. And then at right tackle, it could be Mike Rimmers, who I think is more than capable at right tackle, or it could be Lucas Niang, who you drafted last year in the third round.
Two. Well, the big news story in Kansas City from the weekend that will affect today is that Royals top pitching prospect Daniel Lynch has been called up to the show. He will start tonight, which can be heard right here on 610 Sports Radio. Burns on Deck Show starts in a little under an hour. Carrington, were you surprised by the timing of the call-up for the Royals' top prospect?
I was a little bit surprised because typically if a team's going to make a move like this, they're doing it because they need a little bit of a jump. They need a little bit of a boost, especially when you factor in who he's replacing. He's replacing Jacob Junis, who has been good so far this year. Junis has not been an issue. Maybe you like him a little bit more in the bullpen than you like him as a starter, but he's been a good starter for this team. He's been a good fourth or fifth option for this club. But it also goes to show you, if you had any questions about whether or not the Royals were all in and believing that they have a chance to win, this isn't the first day that we're going to have season debut from one of the prospects. It's just the first time this season that we're having that conversation. Daniel Lynch is up first. I would say probably by the 4th of July, we'll see another one of these and we'll have another one of these moments. The Royals are all in. The Royals genuinely believe that they can compete. I'm still a little bit hesitant on their ability to win the American League Central, but you got to be all in on this team being a potential wild card team. Look at what's happening with the White Sox right now. They hate their manager. That didn't take long. It took less than 30 games for them to already have an issue with Tony La Russa. And then look at the Minnesota Twins. They're 6 games back right now, the Kansas City Royals. They're 6 games back of the Royals, and the Royals haven't really got super hot yet. The Royals still have a negative run differential. So we're not talking about the Royals playing some real fluky ball. I don't think that's happened. There's still a lot of room to grow. Obviously, a lot of season left with the Royals. But today is the first day of many that pieces that are foundational and building block pieces for the future are now being called up as major contributors to help out this Royals team and their playoff push.
Three.
Well, unfortunately, the Royals, not all good news to the pitching staff, as Brad Keller yesterday had another, what I would call, bad outing, albeit he only gave up 2 earned runs, did not get much help from his defense. Carrington, we are now 6 starts into Brad Keller's season. What is your concern level, and what should the Royals do with the one-time ace?
I'm watching Law & Order Organized Crime, and for those of you that are not caught up, you can close your ears for a second. There's this part where Stabler walks into the room, and they're like trying to have like an intervention because Stabler clearly needs help. I feel like we're getting close to that point with Brad Keller. I'm not all the way there yet because we're only talking about 6 starts. But I'm about 2 starts away from pulling the help button. I'm about 2 starts away from, we got to have a serious conversation. If this team is going to stay in it for the duration of the season, they are going to do it because something happens with Brad Keller. Either Brad Keller goes down and then somebody better steps up and they put Junis back in the rotation and he takes over Brad Keller's spot. Or they got to come up with some phantom injury for Brad Keller just to give him a couple of weeks off. I don't know what you need to do. Shoulder tightness, elbow tightness. I don't know what it is. But you can't continue to carry a guy on your roster who has 1 quality start so far this season and has an ERA of 8 6 games into the season.
4.
Well, the biggest national storyline out of the draft was Aaron Rodgers. Now, he is mad at their GM, who has not done anything to help him.
Aaron Rodgers is always mad. You know how sometimes with your girlfriend, it doesn't matter what you do, but your girlfriend is just going to be unhappy about something? That's how Aaron Rodgers treats playing football for the Green Bay Packers. When was the last offseason that we heard Aaron Rodgers was happy? 2013? It's been a long time since Rodgers has been happy. This is the problem with Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers wants to be treated like a boss when he's a worker. I don't mean that to be disrespectful. A lot of us are workers at our job. He wants like personnel input, and he gets mad when they release players and then is like, I'm only coming back if you fire the general manager. He's always upset about something. At one point, it was a Mike McCarthy thing. Now it's a general manager thing. Maybe the problem is Aaron. I understand we're willing to put up with it because of his immense ability, and he's arguably the second most important player in the NFL behind Patrick Mahomes, but if I'm the Green Bay Packers, I tell Aaron Rodgers very simply, bro, you got 3 choices here. The same way that we all have 3 choices at our job. Tomorrow, if you go up to your boss and you say, hey, I'm making X, I want to make Y, they can either give you what you want, or they can tell you, no, go back to work, or you can quit. That's it. So if Aaron Rodgers is unhappy, what I would tell Aaron Rodgers if I am the general manager of the Green Bay Packers or the owner of the team, I tell him this. You can either go back to work and be the quarterback of the Green Bay Packers and get paid very handsomely to do so. You can hold out and just not show up to work and miss out on this money and spend time with your wife and play Jeopardy, do whatever you want to do, or retire and you owe us $23 million. But we're not trading you. You're the second most valuable player in the league. We're not trading you. It's the silly argument back and forth of Aaron Rodgers. And Aaron Rodgers going through the media to do his dirty work has been shameful behavior. He has used the media at every step this week to tell us exactly how he feels. Then at the Kentucky Derby, he just doesn't want to answer questions while he bets on Mystic River or whatever horse that it was that won. Shameful behavior from Aaron Rodgers. Let's head to the phone lines right now and be joined by our next guest. He is the chairman, the CEO, the owner of the Kansas City Chiefs. His name is Clark Hunt. Clark, we appreciate you coming on. Earlier, you guys posted a picture with Terrez Paylor, and everybody had on the All Juice hoodies, and it was just really cool to see the support and love that you guys have shown for Terrez Paylor.
Yeah, absolutely. Terrez was somebody who was an incredibly special person.
somebody who did an awesome job of covering the Chiefs for 6 or 7 years, somebody that I always enjoyed talking to. His preparation was incredible. Somebody that always brought a smile to your face. We're incredibly, sorry for his loss, and our thoughts are with his family and his fiance as well.
So moving to the football, last time we talked to you heading into the Super Bowl, everything had been going nearly perfect for the Kansas City Chiefs. Obviously, the result wasn't what you expected. What have the last months been like after the Super Bowl?
Well, obviously, the Super Bowl itself was incredibly disappointing, coming on the heels of one of the greatest seasons in franchise history. The one silver lining from a bad experience like losing the Super Bowl is it gives you an incredible motivation to work really hard to try to get back on top. And that's exactly what Brett Veach and his staff have done over the last 6-7 weeks. You look at what they've done in free agency, what they've done over the last couple of days in the draft, and then, of course, the Orlando Brown trade. He's really revamped the entire offensive line, which was one of our issues against the Bucs. And so I think as we head into 2021, Patrick's really going to be playing behind the best offensive line he's had a chance to play behind yet. I know he's excited about it. Andy Reid's excited about it. So great job by Brett and his team.
You're one of the few people that can answer this. Which was the greater feeling, the joy of winning the Super Bowl or the pain of losing the Super Bowl?
Very hard question to answer. Usually the losses are harder than any victory. I always say that, for every loss, it takes 2 or 3 victories to emotionally get you over it. Certainly Super Bowl 54 and the joy of winning the Super Bowl 50 years after the team had won its first Super Bowl, I'll never be able to adequately put that into words. So I don't know that I can compare them. On the one hand, it was great, and on the other hand, it was very, very disappointing.
You called this potentially the greatest offensive line that Patrick has played behind. I feel like Brett and the front office was in the same position they were after the AFC Championship loss. You had to completely retool one part of the team to get it up to a championship level. How would you evaluate the job they've done with going to have 5 new starters on that O-line?
Yeah, well, I think that's a really interesting comparison. And you're exactly right. Coming off the AFC Championship loss, 2 years ago, there was a lot of work that had to happen on the defensive side. And Brett did a great job of bringing in some free agents, Tyrann Mathieu, Frank Clark, drafting some players to add to the mix, and really turned what had been a weakness into a strength. And I think in a lot of ways he's done the same thing here in the last 2 months with offensive line. I would mention that before we had the injuries, we had a very good offensive line last year. And I don't want to minimize the talent or the effort of that group of players. Fisher and Schwartz and their teammates, they did a fantastic job for us in many cases for almost a decade. So that was a great line. But unfortunately, through injury, we were down to some backups by the time we got to the Super Bowl. And just the way things played out in the offseason, Brett really needed to make it a focus and to revamp it. And You're right. As we stare at next year, we're looking at probably 5 new starters on the offensive line versus what we had last year. So it's going to be completely revamped. But I think the great news is it's not with unknown players, right? We're getting a Pro Bowl left tackle, a Pro Bowl left guard. We brought in some veterans that have experience playing on the interior. We drafted Creed Humphrey yesterday to add to the mix. So I think we've got a lot to look forward to, and I would give Brett very high marks for the job he's done.
Right now we're talking to the owner and chairman of the Kansas City Chiefs, Clark Hunt. This has been an offseason of big swings. One big swing was Trent Williams. We've kind of heard some different reports about how close Kansas City was to Trent Williams. We weren't talking about chump change here. Trent Williams signed a 6-year, $130 million deal. How involved were you in the pursuit of Trent Williams?
Yeah, well, any time that we're involved in a trade or the signing of a player to an expensive long-term contract, I'm always going to be in those discussions with both Brett and Andy and their staffs. And, certainly on the one hand, it didn't work out for us with Trent, but we were able to bounce back from that a few weeks later with signing Orlando. And there's a lot to like about both players and their situation, so I don't want to get into comparing them. But we certainly, you know, feel like we ended up in a good place with Orlando. And I tell you what, I've had a couple of conversations with him since we made the trade, and he might be one of the most articulate young men who is so excited to be a Kansas City Chief. I don't really remember somebody, you know, who's reached out to me just to express how excited he is to be coming here. And he's coming from a very good situation in Baltimore. I mean, that's a fantastic team and organization. But he's somebody that I think our fans are really going to embrace, and he wants to be a Kansas City Chief.
Orlando was actually on the show a couple of weeks ago, and I told him that I was surprised we were even having that conversation. When we were talking about potential left tackles for the Chiefs, his name didn't really come up because I didn't think there was a chance that Baltimore would trade a left tackle to Kansas City. How surprised were you that Baltimore was willing to make a deal with you guys, given you two's track record?
To tell the truth, I was very surprised. And I give Brett and his staff a lot of credit for how they managed that process. They knew that if they were too early in pursuing Orlando, that it would probably backfire and we wouldn't be able to get him. And so they exercised some patience and waited till we were getting pretty close to the draft. And usually those type of deals happen close to the draft, before the draft, a week or so. And they just felt that the opportunity was there, and they struck. And it wasn't an easy deal to get done. Certainly, I think the Ravens had a little bit of, you know, concern about sending him our way. But at the end of the day, Brett was able to get it done for what I think was very reasonable compensation, given the quality of the player we're getting. So great job by Brett.
One thing I haven't heard you comment on is Alex Smith. You obviously have a great history with Alex Smith. He retired. You know everything that he's been through. What do you think of sort of his retiring and moving on to the next phase of his life?
Yeah, well, thank you for giving me an opportunity to talk about Alex, because certainly if you look at the recent history of the Kansas City Chiefs, you cannot speak highly enough about Alex Smith and everything he brought to our organization. He came in with Andy Reid to a situation, you know, where the team had really, really struggled, particularly the quarterback situation at that position. And you know, overnight made us one of the better teams in the league. I mean, we started that first year with Alex and Andy. We won 9 straight games. And Alex certainly gets a lot of credit for that. There's been a lot of talk about the job that he did in mentoring Patrick Mahomes and how he handled that, the class individual that he was. And I just, you know, can't speak highly enough about his time here in Kansas City. And then we all know his recovery from the horrific injury in Washington over the last 2 or 3 years. You know, very, very sad that, you know, that was part of his career. But again, I respect him tremendously for being willing to come back from an injury that many people would have hung up their cleats and said, I can't play football anymore. And I certainly wish him all the best in retirement. I hope we get to see him in Kansas City sometimes. Certainly the door is always open here.
I have to ask you a question about Patrick Mahomes. You know that there is a certain quota I have to hit with asking you questions about him. One thing that I think you guys do incredibly well that I don't know if it's too common around the NFL is you guys always go above and beyond, I think, to give Patrick the support he needs. He needs a running back. You draft one in round one. He needs a new offensive line. You do it. How important is it as an organization to give him the resources he needs to go out and be great?
Yeah. Well, I think that's a core part of the philosophy of how Brett has built the Chiefs. And also, I think it's consistent with Andy Reid's mindset in terms of how you make a strength an even bigger strength. Clearly, we're fortunate to have Patrick here in Kansas City, you know, probably the greatest quarterback of his generation. And I know he's only 3 or 4 years into his career, but, you know, certainly he's gotten off on a very fast start. And, you know, Brett and Andy have made it a focus to give him the tools that he needs to show his talent, because they think that's the best way for the Kansas City Chiefs to win. So it's definitely part of the philosophy, and Brett's done a great job with it here over the last few years.
Every time you and I talk, there's a new update with Patrick Mahomes' life. He is now a minority owner with the Kansas City Royals. He is now a father. What advice have you given him about being an owner? What advice have you given him about being a new father?
Yeah. Well, we actually haven't talked about being an owner. But I know he'll be a good one. We all know what a great baseball player Patrick was earlier in his career. And I just think he has a tremendous demeanor and way about him. And I'm sure he'll be a big asset for the Royals regardless of how they choose to use him in the organization. As a father, he and I've had a little conversation. I've got two girls. Mine are a little bit older than his, but we've talked about just how precious and beautiful little girls are and what a blessing they are. So I know he's going to be an incredible father as well.
This upcoming season should be different than any season we've seen before. We're adding another regular season game, which you guys are going to be hosting against the Green Bay Packers, also trying to get back to full capacity. How excited are you to get back to, quote unquote, life as normal?
Yeah, well, I think we all are, right? Regardless of what you do, where you work, what you enjoy doing from a pastime, you know, being able to get back to normal is incredibly important. And the faster we can do it, I think it's better for everybody. We're certainly hopeful in the National Football League that we're going to be able to have full stadiums this fall. There are some hurdles that have to be jumped over between now and then. The rollout of the vaccine, that's got to continue to go well. But we're very excited about the prospect of being able to have a full Arrowhead Stadium. A full Arrowhead is a big asset for the Kansas City Chiefs in terms of helping our football team win games. So the sooner that can happen, the better. We're certainly planning on it, and I look forward to seeing our fans back at Arrowhead and tailgating before the game.
So Patrick's excited about it. I'm excited about it. Kansas City is excited about it. Whataburger is coming into town. They're putting a food truck outside Kauffman Stadium. Is there any chance that we could get this food truck outside Arrowhead Stadium?
I read about the food truck, and I thought that was a fun thing for them to do. I know what a fan Patrick is of Whataburger, so we'll just have to see how that goes.
I'm imagining that you love Whataburger. Like, you're from Texas. You spent a lot of time in Texas. I'm imagining you love it the same way I do.
I like any hamburger, but the truth is I don't like my hamburgers nearly as much as Andy.
No, I don't know if anybody does. That is Clark Hunt. He is the chairman. He is the CEO, the owner of the Kansas City Chiefs. He's also friend of the drive, joining us today as the Chiefs continue what has been a stellar offseason for them. Clark, it's always an honor to get a chance to talk to you and keep us updated on what's happening with the team. Thanks for coming on.
Will do. Thank you very much.
It's very interesting to look at the way that Kansas City runs their organization and the way that Green Bay runs their organization. Now, maybe it's just a personality thing, and that certainly plays a part of it. Pat and Aaron seem to have very different personalities and sort of how they interact with people. But Green Bay, in their last 10 drafts, 9 of their first round selections have been on defense. The one offensive player they've drafted in round 1 was Aaron Rodgers' replacement. So during the height of Aaron Rodgers' power, they haven't gone out and given him a first-round wide receiver, a first-round tight end, a first-round running back. Have they truly given Aaron the support that he needs to exhibit his talents, is the term that Clark used. You can't argue that in Kansas City. The last 2 years, this year, they trade their first-round pick for a franchise left tackle that's going to play with Pat for the next 5 to 7 years. The year before that, a running back where, you remember, they asked Pat, out of these three, who do you like? He picked Clyde Edwards-Helaire. They then drafted Clyde Edwards-Helaire. You want to talk about an organization that is in lockstep with their quarterback? That's Kansas City. You want to talk about an organization that is clearly at odds with their quarterback? It's the Green Bay Packers. I don't want to take for granted how special it is what the Chiefs have right now and harmony amongst everybody that matters. Harmony in the front office. Harmony with the coaching staff and the continuity that they've experienced these last 3 or 4 years. Also with the roster and their quarterback. Right now, the Chiefs are the model franchise in the NFL. Have they had the success of the Patriots? Obviously not, but it's early on. They didn't win the Super Bowl last year. But if you continue on the path that the Chiefs are certainly on, you'll continue to give yourself opportunity after opportunity and chance after chance to find yourself in the most important game of the season. You're listening to The Drive on 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com, and the brand new Odyssey app. We are 30 minutes away from handing things off to Josh Vernier. Speaking of Vern, let's talk some Royals baseball as Daniel Lynch is set to make his major league debut. That's next. Keep it locked in right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive, weekdays 2 to 6.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back into The Drive on 610 Sports Radio and the Odyssey app.
You are listening to The Drive on 610 Sports Radio. Coming up in about 30 minutes, we'll hand things off to Josh Vernier as the Royals start a 7-game homestand. 4 games against Cleveland, 3 games against the Chicago White Sox. They find themselves up 1.5 games in the division over the White Sox. They are currently 6 games ahead of the Minnesota Twins. So today, as the Royals start their home series and start the series against the Cleveland Indians, the big story is Daniel Lynch. Daniel Lynch, who was one of their top pitching prospects as the Royals' next wave really begins, is set to make his major league debut with the Kansas City Royals. Earlier today, we had the opportunity to sit down with Brian Polberg. Brian Polberg is the AAA manager for the Omaha Storm Chasers. So he did not get to manage Daniel Lynch directly, but he was there at the alternate site. So any Royals prospect has come through the alternate site over the last 18 months in the midst of COVID and everything that's going on. So here's what Brian Polberg had to say when he knew that Daniel Lynch was ready for this moment tonight.
Well, it was hard from the alternative site because last summer you're facing your own players the whole time. And I mean, he continued to compete then, but this year in April, when we went and played some other alternative site teams, which we didn't do last year, his stuff picked up another level when he was facing guys in different uniforms, and it was fun to see the competitiveness that he has.
As a Royals fan, this is a really exciting time. Like, the Royals have sort of been in this gray area when it comes to trying to win now and field the best roster possible, but also sort of looking ahead and making moves indicative of a team that is building for the future. I think what you're seeing right now from the Royals is we're getting really close to those guys that we were looking ahead to the future. They're starting to become the best possible options for this team. If Daniel Lynch pitches well, he is not going back down. This isn't a start to kind of sell tickets and boost morale. We think he can help us win. We think we can be a playoff team. Let's start to transition into the organization that we think will be in 2023 and beyond. So Jacob Junis, where we've talked about this on this show and I'm pretty sure any radio show you've listened to in the city over the last couple of weeks, Junis is fine. He can instantly step in and be a 4 or 5 for you. But if this rotation turns out to be what we think it's going to be, I don't know if there's a place for Jacob Junis. One of those reasons is because of guys like Daniel Lynch and Jackson Kowar and Asa Lacy and some of the top prospects in this organization. We're going to have this day at least 2 more times this year, in my opinion, where there is a level of optimism, there is a buzz, because the future is here. And while the future is getting ready, the Royals are also playing at a high enough level where you think a guy like Daniel Lynch can help get you over the hump, help get you to win 86, 87 games, help grab you one of those wild card spots. That's where we are with this team and as an organization and just watching where they are. If you don't believe me, believe the manager of the Omaha Storm Chasers as he talks about the depth of the pitching prospects and what this rotation can be for years to come.
I was able to see some of the other guys, the Heasleys, the Bolins. I mean, they're in Double-A, and you know, I got to go back to when my first came to the Royals. We had the Saberhagens, the Gubazovs, the Danny Jacksons. This is I think we're even deeper than you know them three at this point, and it's great. It's a great position to be in.
I think we are even deeper than we were back in the Brett Saberhagen, Gubazaw era. We're talking about Royals Hall of Famers. We're talking about Brett Saberhagen was a guy who won a Cy Young. A guy was a phenom. We're talking about Gubazaw, a guy who went on to have a double-digit long career and be a solid number two starter for an organization. Brian Polberg, who has been in the Royals organization since the early 90s, said, it reminds me of Saberhagen, Gubazaw, and that mix, and we think we're deeper in our rotation. We think we have more pitching prospects than we had back then. That's an incredible message to hear, especially when you're on the cusp and the heels of really turning this thing around and really being competitive. I think right now there's a little bit of cautious optimism when it comes to the Kansas City Royals. Like, I don't want to get too excited about them. But if you look at this stretch that the Royals are in, and we're talking about an organization that has 16 of their next 18 games in the division, we will know everything we need to know about the Royals heading into Memorial Day. Take a snapshot of where this team is now at 16-10, first place in their division. And they have Cleveland for four, White Sox for three, Tigers for another three, and then White Sox for another three before they play a game outside the division. So we're talking about a two-week stretch here where you line yourself up against the teams in your division. You continue these winning ways. You continue to create that separation. You win both of the series against the White Sox. And we're going to be having conversations about them adding pieces at the deadline. We're going to have the conversation of, are they the favorites to win this division? Because Vegas still thinks it's the White Sox. Hell, I still think it's the White Sox. But the Royals have proven me wrong so far. What's not to say they can take it one step further? We will know everything we need to know about the Royals, I think, at the end of these next 3 weeks. All of these games are against the division. If they continue to play great baseball the way that they have, and at the end of this stretch, we're talking about a team that's 3.5 games up in first place, and you're starting to get guys healthy, and maybe Dozier's playing better baseball, or Keller certainly turned things around, or Adalberto Mondesi is less than 10 days away. It's really going to start to get interesting, really start to get fun as we get deeper and deeper and closer into the summer. So tonight, Daniel Lynch makes his major league debut. Dayton Moore met with the media earlier today. He called today a very special day.
Special day, Fizz, for the entire organization. And certainly Danny Lynch, you know, his entire family, all of his youth league coaches, everybody in this community, everybody that's had a hand in him getting to where he is right now. And certainly our player development staff is no different. Our scouting staff. I think of Jim Farr and Keith Conley and, you know, those in the draft room that really pushed for him. Lonnie Goldberg, who is a tremendous scouting director, and it just gets better and better each day as an evaluator and a manager of people. And Danny Ontiveros and, of course, you know, Paul Gibson and J.J. Piccolo and you know, all of our the pitching coaches that Daniel's had throughout the system. I mean, it's a great celebration. And but he's going to be a special one. I mean, I really believe that. You know, he's got some incredible gifts, being very physical and left-handed, and he's got height and leverage and the ability to spin the ball, which is a gift. He's got power to all of his pitches, a changeup that just keeps getting a little bit better and better. It's a tremendous feeling when you draft a player, sign a player, and then he transitions all the way through the minor leagues and then makes his major league debut. I mean, that's what it's all about.
It certainly is a special day. Rob, you're a big Royals fan. You follow the prospects as closely as anyone. What's your excitement level for Daniel Lynch as he makes his major league debut today? And what do you kind of see as he's as his high end? Are we talking about a guy who can be an ace? Are we talking about a guy who you project to be a two or a three starter? Where do you sort of see Daniel Lynch if everything works out according to plan?
If everything goes according to plan, he's a two or a one. And if everything goes perfect, I think he can be a one. And I say one, not ace. I don't know if he can ever be a Clayton Kershaw or a Max Scherzer, but those guys are just built different. But he can be a true number one. I'm really excited about tonight. I would say on a scale of 1 to 10, I'm probably 7.5, probably maybe an 8, because he's the guy that in the pipeline I've been the most excited about seeing. Big, tall, strong-armed, left-handed guy. The Royals really don't develop that body type ever under Dayton Moore. So, and everything you hear and you read and you talk to prospect people were that he's just different. So I would say I'm a 7.5, 8 tonight. If it were full capacity, if there weren't a pandemic and the world were different, I would be there tonight. I would be at a 10. And I think I would be a little bit higher if it didn't. A little part of me is not upset that Jacob Junis got bumped out of the rotation. I understand why it happened, and I'm happy that the bullpen's now better. But there's a part of me that wishes Daniel Lynch stole this job from Mike Minor as opposed to Jacob Junis. But it's a really exciting time for Royals fans tonight. And if he goes out there and has even a little bit of a good performance, the hype train is going to leave the station fast.
Yeah, absolutely. And I wonder if maybe, and I can't speak for you, if the excitement is, I sort of feel like at least with prospects, no one's going to be excited until Bobby Witt gets here. Like it's sort of, that's the 1,000-pound fish. This is a nice size fish, but we're all waiting for that big catch. Like the day that Bobby Witt Jr. gets here, that's a 4 hours. That's all we're talking about. Phone calls. We treat it like a big time Chiefs day or a special part of the show. This just feels like I don't want to say another guy, but I think we've all built Bobby Witt Jr. up to be the star next. Like he's going to be one of those franchise level players. One of those Francisco Lindor, one of those Ronald Acuna, Fernando Tatis Jr., a Vladimiro Guerrero Jr. I think that's sort of where we've treated it, where I think the Lynch call up is nice and it's certainly an excitement. There'll be a buzz and a energy there, but I think everybody's sort of waiting on the big call up, and that's Bobby Witt Jr.
I wonder how much that has to do with the fact that we didn't really have a minor league season last year, because there's no, well, he did this in Double A last year and get some buzz going. The reason that Bobby Witt got all the buzz is that he tore up the alternate site last year and then did it at spring training, and everyone was, you know, hot to trot. Let's say Daniel Lynch didn't play the alternate site last year. They had a traditional minor league season, and he went out there and was great in either Omaha or Northwest Arkansas, your choice. I think the buzz would be bigger. I think some of the lack of buzz, for no better term, is that there is no, well, look what he did last year, because he didn't have a last year. So it's all based on what you're hearing and what you read from the prospect people. And I hear and read all those things from the prospect people, but the prospect people like draft people. They're wrong every once in a while, too. Like, they don't hit at 100%. So I think that is the reason for some intrepidation for Royals fans. I think if he had a season last season, a real season, there would be a lot more hype in town because they could point to his ERA, his win-loss, as much as I hate that stat, or even things like F-war and things like that. But I think the lack of a season really kills a little bit of the hype.
Are we at the point right now with the Royals when it comes to this, just simply split the series with the Cleveland Indians and win the series this weekend against the White Sox so they have a 4-3 homestand? That's kind of where I am with this team.
Yeah.
Especially if they win the series against the White Sox. When you think about it, last year, the White Sox terrorized the Royals. The Royals went 1-9 against them. They're already 1-1 this season. If they come out of it where they split the series earlier and then they win their first three-game series, I imagine we expect it to be played. The rain sort of subsided a little bit here. And then they win a series this weekend against the Chicago White Sox. The buzz is just going to continue to grow and grow and get bigger and bigger and bigger. So I'm looking at this weekend or this week as they have 7 games. 4-game series are always tough. Split the 4-game series against Cleveland. This weekend against the White Sox, win the series against the White Sox heading into that off day before they take on the Detroit Tigers.
I totally agree. Do you remember This is not a throwback. Remember in 2014 when the Royals were battling down the stretch with the Tigers, and the Tigers would beat them consistently?
Yeah, that was back in 2014.
Yeah, the Tigers were just, I mean, they weren't better than the Royals, but they would just thump the Royals. And it always felt like, we're so close, get thumped. I don't want to say it's the same as battling down the stretch with the Tigers in 2014, but if the Royals can split with Cleveland and then win this weekend with Chicago, I think that would be huge for not only the team's confidence, but for the city's confidence. Because they are the boogeyman. Even though you're ahead of them in the standings, and they just had another injury, Luis Robert is going to be out for 12 to 16 weeks, and they hate their manager, all those things exist. But if the White Sox keep punching you down every time you step up to them, eventually Royals fans are going to be like, yeah, they're good, but they're not the White Sox. You go out and win this White Sox series in front of a big fan base, because I assume you'll get a good gate this weekend because the White Sox. I think buzz is going to get big, big, and like around Memorial Day, we'll be talking about the P word.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, I'm already there when it comes to the P word.
I'm not quite the P word yet.
I'm at the P word. I'm at the word playoff. Now, I haven't allowed myself to entertain the possibility that they could win the division. Like, I'm not at that point. Like, I don't think the Royals are going to win the division. I do think the White Sox eventually get things right. I do think they straighten it out. And I still just think the White Sox just have more talent than the Royals. But, man, when you think about the injuries that are starting to mount up, the White Sox just had another injury for a guy who's out to 8 to 12 weeks. They're already having a couple of injuries. You think about it right now with the chemistry with their manager. We're getting reports from Jeff Passan that they already don't like their manager, Tony La Russa. And that didn't take a whole lot of time. Like, it didn't take the first full 30 games for them to already have an issue with who the manager is of the Chicago White Sox. They just don't appear to all be on the same page. And is their talent enough to overcome it? Or do they eventually get some things figured out and then push towards where we thought they were going to be at the very beginning of the season? The Royals right now, at least from a chemistry standpoint, can't really be at a better place. I still think the Royals have room to grow. They have a negative run differential. And they're starting the process and wave of getting their rotational pieces up here. So I think there's a lot of reasons to be optimistic about the Kansas City Royals as we really get this thing going. Coming up after us, we hand things off to Josh Vernier as the Royals start their series against the Cleveland Indians. Tomorrow, we'll continue breaking down the Chiefs draft. Take care of yourself. It's The Drive.